Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Indian Dream and Business Munchies, where we munch on some business ideas. Today, for the first time in I think 5 or 6 weeks, is just Siddharth and I hosting Business Munchies. So Siddharth, we want to start this episode with an announcement. What is it?
So we started 9 months back creating content on just one episode per week. We slowly scaled it to 2 episodes per week, which was Trends, Founder Journeys, Business Munchies. You guys know all about it. We started a newsletter. You guys know all about that. But there's an addition. We're doing one more thing. We've launched our podcast in Hindi called Yeh Hai Dhande Ki Baat in an exclusive partnership with Gaana. Go check that out. The link is going to be in the show notes. We're going to be doing Founder Journeys in Hindi. We have some exciting episodes lined up. One of the episodes that we've launched right now is with the founder of Ferns and Petals. What a story. Go check that out. And we'll be creating more content in different languages now.
That's why you haven't seen any founder journeys on the Indian Dream in a while, because we've been taking all of that stuff over there. This has been in the making for about 6 months. We've had a lot of ups and downs. It's a kind of a crazy story, but we're really excited to finally get our Hindi podcast out. You will not hear me at all on that podcast. Check it out too if you like Siddharth's voice. Okay, so
we need to explain why we won't hear you, Sahil. We can't just let that slide away so easily, right? Sahil can barely speak Hindi. If you listen to him speak Hindi, you'll feel bad for him. You'll want to put him like out of that misery and just be like talking whatever language you're comfortable in, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that bad. I get by. But okay, moving on to the ideas, right? The first idea is going to be a bit weird, but it's something that I have seen my wife really get into over this past year. Rare plants and also gardening in general. So when we were in Sikkim recently, this was pre-second wave. We were in Sikkim in like February. And on the side of the road, my wife sees a plant. She's like, oh my God, do you know what plant this is? This is a variegated Monstera Albo something, something, something. And it sells for $1,000 each in the US, right? $1,000 each in the US. And this was just growing on the side of the road in Sikkim. So she just takes out a scissor. I don't know where she got it from. And she cuts it and she wraps it very carefully and she gets it all the way back. And now we have like 2 or 3 of these $1,000 plants in our house. So if we ever wanted to make some extra money, we could just propagate them and we could just sell them for $1,000 each shipping to the US. And that is a legit business. It's not that big in India right now, but it is a huge business in other tropical countries like Thailand and Indonesia. There are these giant plantations of house plants that they just cut and they wrap it up and they ship it to the US because the logistics has been solved. This is an opportunity in India. Rare plants and plant collections are getting bigger in India because I think Indians do love plants. But the bigger opportunity, in my opinion, is the export opportunity to the US because those guys just like to collect everything. And they have enough money now with their whole stimulus checks and all of that stuff. So yeah, take some of that US money.
Sahil, I want to go back and focus on one of the things that you said when you were talking about rare plants is the shift that we are seeing in gardening in general. I have some point of views on this, but before I go, can you share from your perspective, since your wife is into this, what are some of the shifts that you're seeing in the bigger gardening space?
Yeah, so this is something that I've seen in the last couple of years as my wife has become really involved in the entire gardening community in India. So she has her own Instagram page called The Bombay Gardener. Please follow her. What I've seen happen is that there have been more and more gardening influencers. The reason for that is because gardening is becoming more popular in India and across the world. So this is a trend that started pre-lockdown, but the lockdown really, really accelerated it, right? Because people were stuck at home. They wanted to see more beautiful homes, but also they wanted a hobby that they could do at home. So overall, if you look at the overall global market for gardening, it's like $50 billion. In India, it'll be a part of that. But the Indian market actually fell during the lockdown because the Indian market was dependent on the physical locations of nurseries where people could no longer go. However, there were a bunch of websites that really proliferated during this lockdown. So number one, gardening supplies, like your pots, your what are they called? Like where you used to dig. My wife is a gardener, not me. So gardening supplies really boomed. That's number one. Number two, there are a bunch of plant websites that really boomed. There's one called ugao.com. I think they do like 10, 15 crores in revenue. They're like 3-4 years old. There's another one called what? Bagicha.com?
Mybagicha.com. I don't know how much they do in revenue, but I've seen Kareena Kapoor advertised for them on Instagram. So
must be quite a bit. I know there's one nursery in Bombay called Plant People, and they have a very thriving Instagram, and they sell through Instagram as well. So you can go there physically, but they also sell from Instagram. So what's happening is, number one, the gardening market globally is growing, driven a lot by the West, but now it's coming to India as well. Number two, because it's growing, a bunch of influencers are popping up. So there's a bunch of content that's being produced. And number three, because of the lockdown, the physical gardening infrastructure is moving online. Because you can't go to the nursery anymore and then there'll be this bhai being like, ha, aapko kya chahiye, you know, that kind of stuff. That's no longer happening. Now you have to go on the website where you have a chat box saying like, oh, hey, what kind of plant do you want? So that's what I see as changing in the plant.
I like how your voice changed from that physical location, somebody, the salesman there or saleswoman there, and like the chat box. I like how you changed the voices there. But the other trend that I've seen during lockdown, and as you said, this was probably happening before, but it got accelerated, is people wanting to grow their own food in their homes, right? So people are using their terraces, their balconies to do vertical farming, to do interesting stuff using hydroponics, soil-less farming, leca balls and cocoa peat and whatnot. People are basically saying that, can I grow my own food? That could be a hobby that people are pursuing, but also a growing sort of concern about the food that we are eating and the pesticides and chemicals in that and how you can replace it with growing your own stuff. That's something that's happening quite a bit, and the gardening market plays directly into that space.
Yeah, so right before COVID, I think it was February 2020, I had gone to an IoT exhibition in Bangalore. And what I did not expect to see over there was something about vertical gardening. So there was there was some IoT company that had built a fully automated vertical garden. All you had to do was just like add water, put some chemicals, and it would just run itself. So then in a space constrained place like India, because no matter what metro you go to in India, it is space constrained. In your apartment, in your small apartment, then you can start growing vegetables on your wall anywhere. So you're seeing vertical gardens, you're seeing terrace gardens, you're seeing whatever space that they can, people are growing more vegetables, 100%. And hydroponics, soil-less, all of that stuff.
And the other thing, this is, we saw an article by the founder of Snapdeal, who said like the increase in selling these plant accessories and stuff like that on Snapdeal increased during the lockdown and was primarily driven by tier 2, tier 3. Now, the reason why that's happening, and I can relate to this, is tier 2, tier 3 people generally have more space. They generally, you know, have a space to garden and stuff like that. And people are putting in a lot more effort and money into beautifying their homes and these gardens, right? So a lot of money is being spent on plants.
People in tier 2, tier 3 like Indore have money?
You'll be surprised, my friend.
Okay. One more thing that I want to say is that this is a trend that we had covered before, is about Ayurveda. What I'm seeing is that Ayurveda is becoming cool again. Ayurveda is no longer that like, ha, meri dadi ne ye kaha. How bad was the Hindi?
It'll be perfect. People will know.
Okay. So Ayurveda is no longer that thing that like my grandmother is telling me to have Chyawanprash and all that stuff, right? Ayurveda is becoming like with Dr. Vaidya's, with all of these new age D2C Ayurveda companies, the face of Ayurveda is changing. And therefore, people are growing more Ayurvedic plants at home. For example, Tulsi. You go to any Indian's home and you will generally see a Tulsi plant somewhere, because they believe in the medicinal properties of that. So as gardening itself is growing, you will also see more of these Ayurvedic plants, I think. That's my opinion. And I think you could build a business. The only thing that business does is selling you Ayurvedic plants and telling you how to take care of your Ayurvedic plants and then telling you how to use the Ayurvedic plants. Now, this now let's go into the opportunities that I'm seeing in gardening, right? Number one, like we just mentioned, content websites. Most of the content that's on the internet right now is US, UK based, right? So these are all these gardeners in the US and UK or Europe, and the weather over there is completely different. But a gardener in India can't use the same trips, can't use the same tips. And this is something that I found out from my wife, because she gardens and she has to go online to find answers to her questions. And she'll be like, oh my God, this worked in the US, but it won't work for me here. And she's had to do a lot of trial and error to learn and to teach herself. So number one, content websites or YouTube, like if you know a lot about gardening, you can have a YouTube channel, but content in general on gardening is lacking from tropical countries, from developing countries. Number two, landscaping. Especially in cities like Bombay, landscaping is becoming a bigger and bigger job. I know several people who work as professional landscapers. What I've also started seeing, because people have approached my wife for this, is interior design plus gardening for an apartment. How do you combine both of them to have to build a beautiful space? Because oftentimes apartments are very small, very congested. So how do you combine both of that?
Service business to be in. Great service business to be in. Margins are high. Yeah.
What else do you see? I think we've discussed a lot of ideas already.
Yeah. So something that I'm bullish on is people helping figure out gardening at home using kits. So I know someone who does hydroponic kits, Pinfresh, ISB Alum, and I've sort of interacted with him a bunch of times when I was exploring hydroponics. They sell kits to allow you to grow your leafy greens at home, right? These are plug and play kits with all the equipment, chemicals, whatever you need to grow, right? So a lot of people are going to say, I don't have the time bandwidth to go figure it out myself and iterate and trial and error. Tell me something that already works and give me that in a packaged format. I think that's going to happen a lot.
Because what I've realized looking at my wife, who is a fantastic gardener, gardening is not as easy as it looks. There's a lot of knowledge that you need to be good at it. And if you can just simplify it for people, yeah, that's the best way to do it.
Exactly. I mean, trading of rare plants, I think somebody really needs to do it. I don't know why you not quitting everything that you're doing and just focusing on that. Seems like a very interesting opportunity. And while you were talking, I was Googling, and it seems like a legit business in Thailand and Indonesia. It's not like a side hustle or anything. It's like exporters sitting just to do this.
Dude, no joke. While the pandemic was going on, my wife was just waiting for travel to open up again so that she could travel to Indonesia or Thailand and just pick up a bunch of stuff, come back to India, and then propagate it.
Yeah. And also learn from these guys on how they're selling it in the US, who are they selling to, and the entire value chain.
Okay, Siddharth, what's the second idea?
So I want to go deeper into the business of expert networks. Before I explain what this is, let me give you a personal story. When I was right out of my job at this fintech SME startup, I got an email saying that, hey, somebody wants to talk to you about the SME fintech ecosystem in India, and you will be paid 10,000 rupees for that 1 hour meeting. My first response was, this is a scam. This is obviously sounds like a scam, smells like a scam. But I engaged because I'm a curious person and I go down these rabbit holes for no reason. And more I researched about this, it seemed like it's legit. So I said, okay, sure. Like, let's do it. I have nothing to lose. I got on this call. They asked me a bunch of questions about what's happening in the SME lending ecosystem in India, and I could share as much as I could. And then I got 10,000 rupees in my account the next day. This actually happened. So I went deeper into what this is. There's a full-blown expert networks industry, a $1.5 billion industry globally, which is just arranging calls between subject matter experts. And on the other end, this could be hedge fund managers, venture capitalists, anybody who wants to understand this space a little more by people who are doing this on the ground.
And it's not that old of a business either, right? It's, I think, only like 10, 15, maybe 20 years old, the entire industry.
Exactly. And growing at a very fast clip.
You know what? The thing is, even I have friends who have done this. So I have a friend who's a manufacturer, and he signed up for this. And he gets paid, I think, $500 an hour. And he's done 10 of them or something like that. So he's just made $5,000 just like that.
Are you telling me I got shortchanged on 10,000 rupees? Should I have been asking more?
100%.
Damn. But anyway, so there's a large company, GLG Insights, that does about $500 million, where a big part of their business is expert networks. They do provide other insights also. Alpha Sites is their second biggest competitor that does about $200 million in revenue.
Dude, I had applied for a job at Alpha Sites in, I think, what was it, 2014. They rejected me. Yeah, but yeah, it's nice to see that they're doing well.
Yeah, they are doing well. Now, I got curious about what are the use cases for this, right? So hedge fund, venture capitalists, obvious use case where people who want to invest, they want to know more about the industry, more about the company and stuff like that. But there are a bunch of other use cases. One, a lot of news publications, even in India, the ones that do daily stories on a particular business, end up paying a decent amount of money to these employees of certain organizations just to understand a few things. I don't know how legal that is, but it happens, right? That's one use case. The other use case that I was thinking of, and I think this is where the industry is going to head to, is basically we have something called as open source for technical knowledge. People write their code and then just put it on GitHub and whatnot, and it's open source, right? There's nothing like that for business knowledge. There's nothing like that for marketing, for strategy, for operations and stuff like that, right? Can you take this knowledge and try and make it more open source? By, if not, you know, it's hard to sort of share this knowledge because you need context, but can you put these people on like a marketplace where you can go and subscribe, or you can go and say that, hey, I want to talk to this person because this person was at Ola when they were doing hyperscaling, and now I'm at Meesho and I'm trying to do the same thing. How can I learn from somebody who's been there, done that? Is by having a conversation or two with these guys, right? And this is also falls right up with the creator economy that we are seeing, which is basically people saying that, how can I monetize the knowledge that I have as an individual? How do I become a solopreneur? This could be a good revenue stream right there. So I went down the rabbit hole, as I said, and there's a company in the US called Office Hours, very recently launched, trying to do the exact same thing, which is basically trying to put all of these people on a marketplace format so that people can come in and say that, I want to learn more about this. I want to learn more about space tech. I want to learn more about, you know, plastic manufacturing or whatnot. And hence I want to connect to these people.
Well, this sounds like a pretty interesting industry. I see another use case, by the way. I see a use case in legal cases and also in antitrust cases. So this is actually something that I studied in college when I was studying economics, that when you're doing an antitrust case, you need a lot of economists to come in on that. And also for legal cases, you need a lot of experts to weigh in. So this might be a different way to get legal opinion without spending the obscene amount of money that people spend on legal case experts.
Even taxation, for that matter, exact same use case.
Yeah, exactly. So when you're fighting with the government about some taxation issue, maybe this might be a cheaper way to do it. Rather than billing like 10 hours, 500 hours or whatever, you bill only 1 hour.
Because what you need at the end of the day is direction, right? You want to talk to this person and say, hey, this is a potential direction we can explore, and then work with your, you know, tax consultant or legal consultant to explore that direction.
Exactly.
Just quickly to wrap this up, I think there are opportunities to go niche in this. You can focus on particular sector, let's say exports, and try and sort of map all the subject matter experts for exports into one platform. You can also do region wise. So there are a couple of people focusing just on India and Southeast Asia. I think CleverX, Next Insights are some opportunities. But in general, I think this is a space that's still very nascent, and interesting stuff can be built.
Okay, fair enough. So yeah, you could go niche. Another thing is that I feel like the SME entrepreneurs are lacking this knowledge as well. Because, for example, this is something that you told me a while ago, Siddharth. When you started your hydroponics business, you could not find anybody to help you, right? And you said that the only people you could find were consultants, and the incentives that consultants have are perverse. When I say perverse, I don't mean that. Okay. When I say perverse, I don't mean that in a bad way. What I mean is that it doesn't align with your incentives, because your incentive is that you want to figure out this problem, while the consultant's incentive is that they want to make as much money as possible. And they can do that by billing you as much as possible. right?
So I think there's a time and place for a consultant wherein once you figure out the idea, once you know exactly what you're doing, you want to go talk to a consultant and get them on full time, or at least to help you out. But there's a stage before that is when you're exploring, when you're trying to figure this out. That's not when you want to talk to a consultant because they're going to try and upsell, right? You want to talk to somebody who's been in this space, who's had firsthand experience. A lot of people have since then reached out to me about telling me my hydroponics experience, right? I think that goes a long way in sort of helping people not make the same mistakes.
Exactly. So yeah, so all of these GLG insights and all that stuff is quite expensive. But I feel like if there's a way to help smaller people at a less cost to get these insights without like hiring expensive consultants, without paying $1,000 an hour, is there a space over there? I think there might be. I don't know how I would structure it, but I think there would also be a space over there for SME entrepreneurs looking for these kind of insights, because this is a problem I have faced where I wanted to find a solution to a problem, and the only thing I could find when I looked on LinkedIn were consultants. And when I called the consultants, the only thing they would try to do is they would try to sell me their full-time job. Now, I didn't want to do that because it was a small issue. But one last thing before we close this out is I have a friend who's doing something similar. He has a website called Collabtree. It's a collab with a K. And they do the exact same thing, but with academic researchers. So let's say, for example, you want to start a plant-based meat company, right? And you don't have any background in biomedical engineering. You can just go to my friend's website. You can hire a biomedical engineer for a project, and maybe they charge you $60 an hour, and the project will take 100 hours or whatever. Okay, so that's $6,000 that you pay to this person. If you had to do this another way, how are you going to go and find a biomedical engineer, maybe sitting somewhere in the US or in Europe or somewhere else, right? So there is a need for this kind of marketplace to find experts, 100%, because earlier when you had to go to university and you had to find them, it was much harder. Anyway, I think this is enough for this topic. Let's move on. What else do you have for us, Siddharth?
Okay, this is another idea that I've very briefly explored just out of personal curiosity. I love trying out new cuisines. I think everybody does, right? When I was in Bangalore and Gurgaon, it wasn't that big a deal because I would just go out and grab something. But since I've moved to Indore, this is where the tier two reference and jokes come in. The cuisine limitations have significantly sort of kicked in, right? There are not many different cuisines that are out there. It's not that big a market. But what we do instead is we end up buying a lot of ingredients and cook different stuff at home, right? Burritos and, you know, noodles and green curry and whatnot. The problem there, one, is to find the right ingredients. It's not always straightforward. But when you do find those ingredients, you have to buy these big bottles and jars of things that you're not going to use, and they're going to go bad. So we had olives that expired, we had jalapenos that expired, and a bunch of other things that expired because we never could use the large bottles. How about a subscription service, which basically gives you once a month, sends you a box of ingredients, everything that you need to cook for two people or four people, you figure that out, gives you the exact dish that you're going to be making and all the ingredients packaged properly in the same quantity that you need it, with like a recipe card or an app that shows you the recipe and stuff like that. So basically helping you try different cuisines at home. If the legality or the legal structure provided an opportunity here, this could work really well with alcohol also, by saying that I'm going to send you a bottle of wine, Portuguese wine, along with the Portuguese cuisine that I'm sending to you, right? I don't think the alcohol can happen in India today, but that will be a very high margin if you can figure that out. But even the subscription box, I think, can be a high margin business.
I've seen this before in India. I remember 4 or 5 years ago, I remember doing something like this with my mom, where we got a box of ingredients and we cooked some, I think, Thai curry or something like that. So this has happened in the past. I don't know if that company still exists. I don't remember the name. But it's definitely something that I would also buy. I don't know why that company no longer exists.
Yeah, I mean, subscription boxes in India came in a big way 3-4 years ago. I think the idea of subscription hadn't been popular back then. I think that significantly changed because of Netflix, Hotstar, and all of those. People are now more comfortable doing subscriptions. So I think maybe a better market right now. But whatever said and done, it's a difficult operational thing to handle, because you're, you know, repackaging a lot of stuff and package in certain quantity, and these are food ingredients, perishability, all of those things. I'm not saying this is an easy business to get into, but not everything that we discuss on Munchies are great and easy businesses to get into.
Yeah, so I Googled it, and there's one called Gourmet Box, which is quite similar to what you're talking about. They give you a bunch of different subscriptions for a bunch of different like gourmet food, like chocolate, cheese, pasta, stuff like that. There I found a couple of other ones. I think Eat Fit, if I'm not mistaken, has a subscription box as well, which you then put together for a...
So there are subscription box for food in India. That's already happened. Looking at Blue Apron in the US, which went public, I think there are subscription box in India. But I want to focus something on just exotic. Keep it luxury. Keep it sort of direct-to-consumer luxury, high-end. And Portuguese 1 month and Ethiopian the next month. And yeah.
So you know what? My mom does this between her friends. So every month, one of them... So I think it's a group of like 15, 20 friends. And every month, one of them creates this entire basket of food and they send it to each other. And every month, it's a different kind of cuisine. So I remember, so because my brother-in-law is Mexican, my mom sent a Mexican basket to everybody. Then in the past, we've gotten like these cheese boxes. We've gotten some amazing food, like all across India as well. I remember we got a Bengali box once. That was damn good. They sent mustard and stuff. Oof. So this kind of, it definitely happens in close-knit communities, like my mom's friends. But yeah, can you scale it to a business? I would love it. I would definitely subscribe. But yeah, I think one issue in India that I've seen with exotic food, because I personally love exotic food, is getting the ingredients is super difficult. So Urban Platter has started solving this issue. Where you're starting to get a lot of exotic food for kind of affordable prices. I'll give you an example. Kimchi. Good kimchi was impossible to find in India. But now with companies like Bombucha, there is some fantastic kimchi. For people who don't know, kimchi is a spicy fermented cabbage from Korea. You would constantly see it in Chinese restaurants, but that was just shit kimchi compared to the real thing. Another example of, again, very sad, I love Ethiopian food. And there used to be an Ethiopian restaurant very close to my house in Bombay. There was also an auntie in Bombay who used to cook Ethiopian food because her family was from Ethiopia. Both of these people shut because they were not able to get the food from Ethiopia anymore. They were not able to import it anymore. This is what I would say is going to be your biggest challenge with this idea, is getting the ingredients on a regular basis.
Yeah, I was just thinking when you were talking about this, right? I think you mentioned Urban Platter is sort of solving it, but I think there's an opportunity to do just that. E-commerce for exotic ingredients, pair it up with good content and just say, order whatever you want, right? Like forget subscription boxes because these are difficult to manage. Let's start with just an e-commerce which aggregates a bunch of different brands and products from across the globe, even within India from different regions. And you just build an e-commerce business out of that. That could be an opportunity.
Yeah, I definitely think so, because there is a demand. Oh, wait, isn't Godrej Nature's Basket and Food Hall, they're also kind of trying to do this, but they're selling at ridiculous prices. But yeah.
One, I think they're not online first. The problem is, except beyond Bombay, Gurgaon, Delhi, you don't have a big enough market to sustain a high-end retail store in all the cities, right? Indore, Bhopal, Raipur, Ahmedabad, Jaipur combined together could be a large enough market. But if you have to open 5 stores to cater to this market, it's not going to be profitable. Nature's Basket sort of significantly downsized from Bangalore and a couple of other places and just focused on Bombay, I think. Food Hall could not expand much beyond that either. There is an affordability concern. But when you go e-commerce, you're targeting that 1% of India, you know, just through an e-commerce platform. You probably can't do perishables and you should not do perishables. Perishables are a tough business to get into. But if you can just do non-perishables, gourmet stuff, as you said, Urban Platter is probably doing it, but I think the market is not a winner take all.
Yeah, I'd love to. I personally would love if this enters. It's just my business brain starts tingling, thinking that there's not enough of a market, because again, we are a kind of a subset of a subset. Your market is going to be that top 2% of India, the non-Bharat. And then within that, it's going to be the people who get to travel a lot, people like us who have lived abroad. So it's going to be a very, very small market. I don't think it's a big enough market to work.
Dude, Cred is targeting the top 2% of India or top 1% of India, and it's valued at $2 billion. I mean, the top 1% is a big enough market in India, to be very honest.
But it's a... Okay, of that top 1, 2%, we're targeting maybe 5% of that 2%. So it's a 0.01%.
Don't get your Gujju brain. Let somebody make this so that we can subscribe to it, because I really want something like this.
Okay, fair enough. Well, if somebody can build this, we will definitely subscribe to you. Okay, so we're going to close this episode out.
All right. With that, we're going to close out the episode. I have one request for you. Please, please drop us a review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Spotify. We want to reach more people, and the algorithm gods are going to help us if you do this. We are stuck at 49 ratings on Apple for God knows how long. Somebody, one kind soul, can you make that 50?